From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 18th day of August, 2020. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. A bit later in the program, Don Day will be here to discuss the agricultural weather forecast, and Dave Chatterton from Strategic Farm Marketing will join us too. He'll take up the agricultural energies. As we close out our time together today, we'll check in with the folks traveling on the Pro Farmer Midwest Crop Tour to see what they found in the states of Ohio and South Dakota. We'll get final results from each of those states and how things have been going in Nebraska and Indiana as they've looked into the fields to see what the corn and soybeans look like. And we'll do that right here on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
September corn today down 4 cents. It finished at 327. December 341 and three quarters, three lower. And the March down 2.5 at 354 and a quarter. May corn 361 and three quarters, 2.5 lower. In July, down a penny and three quarters at $3.67 and three quarters a bushel. September soybeans down a half at $9.12. November, the harvest month, a penny and a half lower at $9.13 and three quarters. In January soybeans down one and a quarter at $9.19 and three quarters. The March a quarter lower at $9.21 and a quarter. July soybeans up a quarter of a cent at $9.29 and a quarter. Bean oil futures 28 cents higher. The bean meal down $2.10. Wheat futures in the July contract down 6 for the soft red at 533 and 3 quarters. The hard red also 6 lower. It finished at 467 and 3 quarters of a cent. Live cattle futures in Chicago, October contract at 109.87 and a half, unchanged. September feeder cattle at 145.60 for 100 pounds, down rather up a buck 20, and lean hogs for the day. In the October at $51.42.5, down $2.10. Crude oil off 14 cents. Ethanol futures down 2 cents a gallon at $1.29. And heating oil or diesel fuel at $1.25.9, about 2 cents higher. The wholesale price of gasoline just about 7 tenths of a cent higher. It's trading at $1.27.7 per gallon. The Dow Jones Industrial Average is just about unchanged, around 21 points lower at this time. And gold futures for the day, up $8.20. We're now joined by Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana, to talk about the marketplace. I bet you've been watching, like I have, the scouts that have been in the field checking out everything across the United States Corn Belt for the Pro Farmer Midwest Crop Tour, thinking about the derecho from last week and what it'll look like when they get into Iowa, and of course, wishing that today was as up a day as it was yesterday, Wayne, would be my guess.
You know, as we look at that and we talk about it, Todd, there's a lot of other estimates coming in that maybe aren't quite as big as the original estimates or the pictures that we saw and everything out there. I think that some of them are on the low end of they're not giving enough credit to the windstorm that destroyed as much as it probably did. And, you know, I think the initial reaction was maybe a little overdone, which it generally is in those cases. So, you know, we've run this market up quite a bit in the last few days, and really wasn't a bad sell-off today if they were really shrinking back their losses out there. But boy, it's going to be hot and dry out west here this week, and we continue to hear that Iowa, especially even some of the areas that got blown down for their beans, even if their corn doesn't make it, are going to continue to need some moisture to finish up this crop without losing a few bushels that way.
So yesterday, did producers call and say, do I need to make sales? And what was your advice if that was the case?
Very few were thinking make sales. Some people were still wanting to buy stuff back. But we did make a few sales yesterday. We scaling in some hedges that we pulled off end of last week when some of the crop advisors or marketing advisors, lifted out of some of their positions. And we're starting to look at where they want to put some of those back on. One of the big advisory firms this morning put out a first day sell signal for corn and beans this morning.
The fundamentals haven't actually changed yet, and USDA is going to survey acreage again, at least for parts of those areas that had the big windstorm. We'll see those numbers in September, and until then, I guess it's wait and see.
Yeah, but I think it's very good that they're being proactive, and they are going to go out and try to maybe see which acres are going to be unharvestable. Won't be anything that way, and see, to give us a much better idea to where we really are. So we're seeing maybe a new and improved USDA's attitude towards looking and seeing and trying to get us the right figures.
Hey, because you deal with the crop insurance, they are, unless the field is zeroed out, going to want that to be harvested.
Basically, they are going to want you to harvest it to get something to see what it is, to be correct that way, or at least go out and say either destroy it. And in one case, if they zero it out, they might ask you to disc it or do something with it along the way so that you can't just maybe go out and get 40 bushels off it and call it a zero without doing it. And that's very frustrating to farmers to say, why do I have to do this or whatever? I won't even pay my combine costs for what I harvest out there. And of course, there's no insurance for combining, you know, the fee for doing that. So it's one of those touchy situations. Fortunately, we don't have to deal with very often, and I don't have to deal with it because I don't have any insured in Iowa. So, but there is, and it is that way, and looking at it. And I will tell you, the insurance agents, adjusters are not going to be out there for probably another 5-6 days because they want to give that crop long enough to see what it might do on its own to correct itself.
All right. Hey, thanks so much. Good advice. Good information. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Todd.
That's Wayne Nelson. He's with L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana. On this Tuesday, let's turn our attention to the weather forecast. Don Day is here from Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Boy, we're going into just a beautiful stretch of weather, I think, in the Corn Belt. Can you tell me how that's made and then what it means across the whole of the United States?
Yeah, we do have a pattern that's quite favorable, and you can thank the stars that this huge blistering hot high that's out in the Great Basin and Rockies is going to just stay stuck there. We're kind of in a pattern that isn't going to change a lot here over the next week or so. So what we have now is what's going to carry forward through the rest of the week and into early next week. So that means temperatures really not bad, occasional chances of showers and thunderstorms, and a pretty good pattern for most of the central and eastern areas of the United States. We're going to continue to have some very hot weather out west. That heat wave is going to start to wane a little bit by early to mid next week, but is going to go strong here for the next few days.
And then will we continue this all the way through the end of the month, do you think?
It is really looking like that. You know, at least up through the last few days of August before we head into September, we think this pattern is going to hold. And another thing to keep an eye on is that the current pattern we're in is very favorable for more tropical activity to get going in the Atlantic and the Gulf of Mexico. Don't be surprised in the next week or so we start hearing about some tropical activity in those areas. That, of course, could be something at the end of the month and into early September that could have an impact on the Midwest as well.
Hey, thank you so much for the quick update. We appreciate it.
Talk to you soon.
Don Day is with Day Weather. He's in Cheyenne, Wyoming. It's a Tuesday. Let's check the agricultural energies now with Dave Chatterton. He's at Strategic Farm Marketing. Hey, Dave, thanks for being with us. I know you watch things really closely, but it doesn't look like the energies have done a lot in the last month. What can you tell me about that marketplace?
Yeah, Todd, since we last spoke, it's been kind of, I won't say a boring month, but it's been kind of a range-bound month. If you take crude, for example, on the futures market, you know, we were trading in a negative number back, you know, early in March. You know, or excuse me, late in March after the COVID thing came around, we've traded up to about the $43 level since that point, but only about a $3 to $4 range in crude the entirety of the last 30 days. Diesel fuel, you know, the bottoms in that also came in late April. They were around 58 cents in futures. We're around $1.25 today, but the range for the last 30 days there, very similar, 122 to 129. So we've kind of gone flat here as the coronavirus has resurged. The economic outlook, both in the U.S. and globally, has kind of drawn back just a little bit. We've had OPEC, you know, they made large cuts to start with. Starting in May, they were cutting 9.7 million barrels per day. They've used that up starting in August at 7.7 million barrels per day and are supposed to produce at that level through December. So pretty well-balanced market for the moment and just not a lot going on the top line features of the marketplace.
As we move towards the harvest season, I was thinking about the supply of propane that might need to be laid in. And I know it's not, the movement hasn't been as much as I thought, or at least what I've learned from all of you over the last couple of months. Have we got enough propane supply for the fall and drying?
Yeah, it's a really good question, Todd, so I'm glad you brought it up. And we do and we don't is kind of the answer. If you look at the top line national number, you're looking at propane inventories well above normal and, in fact, near a record level. Unfortunately, when we break that down into what the Midwestern supply is on a regional basis, we're looking at a supply that's actually a little bit below average of what we've seen over the last 5 years. And so it becomes a position thing and, you know, how spread out is harvest. I think we've seen propane values, you know, recover off of their lows, very similar to what we've seen in these other markets. We were 51 cents in early June for the Gateway Conway market that feeds the Midwest wholesale, you know, marketplace for propane. And we're now, you know, we're now at about 47 cents. I should restate that we were 20 cents on the low in late March. We got to 51 cents for the high in early June, and we now sit at around 47. But those values have shown a reluctance to go lower. We know that we got the USDA predicting what is a record U.S. corn crop. Some of that crop, certainly in our area, went in late and is going to have some, you know, wet features to it. But I think the Decoro winds that we had in Iowa last week add a very interesting wrinkle there, because you've got certainly less corn area that may be harvested and some that may go to silage, et cetera, or be left or destroyed. But you're also going to have corn there that is going to have trouble drying down, and it will have quality issues if it's not dried and conditioned properly, especially if it needs to go into a bag or a temporary storage facility. So I guess I'd be a little bit leery of not having my supply covered, or at least a good portion of it, going into the fall here. We don't have a lot of gauge on winter temperatures and what they'll look like yet, but I think it could be a very interesting fall for propane here, Todd.
Yeah, you just reminded me, as we were talking about Ag Energies and then the derecho of last week, that the area where that was hardest hit is right around a great big ethanol facility in that Cedar Rapids, Cedar Falls area. I would think that could turn pretty hot for basis in the wintertime, right? It just struck me as you were talking. Maybe.
It's going to be a really interesting regional basis. You got three plants that were shut down to some degree, Cedar Rapids being the biggest of those, Todd. And, you know, it's a situation where we're not even sure exactly when they're going to pop back up here, but the grain draw area that they would normally be coming from has basically been flattened. The storage facilities and handling facilities that they would normally rely on to hold grain until they need it, you know, in Jan or in March or in Dece or whatever we're talking about, have also been compromised to a degree, and it's going to be a regional exercise. And, you know, and logistics and basis is certainly going to be affected by that.
Yeah, so we have a big logistics problem there. The Illinois River is closed. We've known that's coming for a very long time. But still, a logistical practice that needs to happen in that area could make for a very interesting fall, I would think, as it relates to basis and the futures market. So we'll be watching all of that. Back to the ethanol usage. How does grind look, and what is gasoline usage like in this COVID-19 area? We bounced, I know, but it seems to me that we've sort of flattened out.
Yeah, and what was a very strong recovery coming out of those March, April, you know, time periods, or even early June time periods, is now kind of flattened itself out. If you look at, I guess we take ethanol production, you know, it's up 71% from where the spring trough came due to the COVID shutdowns, but it's still about 15% below pre-COVID levels, or below where we were a year ago at this time. Corn use for ethanol is down about 11% nationally year to date. Gasoline demand is down about 9%. So we've got a little bit of disconnect there. Ethanol stocks have still been coming down relatively, you know, on the low end of the barrel here. As we mentioned, we've got these three plants out in Iowa that have shut down, and we'd expect them to come back up pretty quickly here, but they could affect the numbers here in the next couple of weeks. So it's an interesting dynamic. I mean, we've stalled out on that macroeconomic front. Our export market is pretty well dead at this point. Our production remains, you know, well below where it was. And trying to balance all that out, I think we're at a point right now where the market going flat, as we talked about in the first segment with futures, is really we're scratching our head as to what the next direction is going to be and where this global economy will actually land or catch or kind of take off again.
Hey, Dave, thanks so much.
Thank you, Don.
Dave Chatterton is with Strategic Farm Marketing. The Crop Scouts have been out all week on the Pro Farmer Midwest Crop Tour, and leading the western leg is Jeff Wilson. Jeff, thank you so much for being with us. Brian Grady is here as well. He's on the eastern leg. I want to start with you, Jeff. What did you find in South Dakota and report last night?
Well, I think we measured probably some record potential crops of both corn and beans in South Dakota. Our average yield measurement in South Dakota on corn was 179 bushels. That's 16% above a year ago, which is in line with the USDA's estimate of a 16% increase in yield. And it's 12% above the three-year average. So very strong performance in the corn in South Dakota, which wasn't unexpected. And our data would suggest that it will be a strong corn yield this year in South Dakota. The ear count up 3.6%, so solid population. Grain length on those ears averaged 5.6% greater than the three-year average, and the number of rows around was up 2.7% compared with the three-year average. So all the levels of productivity of the plant were definitely better than expected. And, you know, some of that might be to the result that we had a lot of prevent plant acres. So a year delay fallow comes back strong the next year. But you could tell that the plant, corn was planted early. It has gotten some timely rains. They've done some very good management practices to keep the weeds down, keep the bugs down, and overall looks like a very high yield potential this year in South Dakota. The soybeans were monster big. We measured over 1,250 pods in a 3 foot by 3 foot area. That's 50%, 50 bigger than a year ago, and more importantly, 36% above the three-year average. So it's a very big increase in terms of pods, and the USDA is only forecasting about an 18% increase year over year. So the beans are much more consistent, lots of pods out there, not very many blooms. The crop, both crops could still use one more drink to reach that yield potential.
And Brian Grady, what did the stats look like from Ohio?
Ohio corn yield came in at 167.7 bushels, so that was up 8.6% from last year. Not really a good comparison, I don't think, to last year's crop. Just it's a different crop. It's a much better crop. It was planted relatively timely. There were some issues. It looked like it was either probably too cold early on. Maybe there's just some emergence issues, blank stalks, skips in some of the rows. So we probably could have measured an even bigger corn crop yield potential. On August 1, USDA put the Ohio corn yield up 6.7% from last year. So we show a little bit bigger increase year over year than what USDA does. But, you know, it's all going to come down to how it finishes. I think the number of ears are up, the grain length is up, so the factory is there to produce a big corn yield in the state of Ohio. It's a matter of how it finishes at this point in time. The record in Ohio, honestly, I don't think it has the consistency to produce a record corn yield in the state this year, but it might come close, and it's probably going to be the second biggest ever in the state of Ohio. On soybeans, pod counts 1156 basically, and that was up significantly. Jeff mentioned how his was up 50%. Ohio was up 51% from a year ago, but you know, not a real good comparison, to be honest with you, because last year was a historically low potted soybean crop in Ohio, and this year is a very strong potted soybean crop. It's up a little bit over 11% from the three-year average, though. So that shows you the yield potential that the soybean crop has. They did get some rains in some of those areas on Sunday evening before we started sampling. And as a result, our moisture levels that we sampled were up from year ago and the three-year average. So if they get a few more timely rains, I think the soybean crop in Ohio could make a run potentially at that 2018 record, but they're going to need some timely rains. The pod counts are down from what they were 2 years ago in the state of Ohio, so they're going to need rains to plump up those beans that are in the pods that we counted if they're going to make a run at a record crop in Ohio.
How has Indiana been, and where are you today?
We moved out of Indianapolis into toward Bloomington, and I can tell you along my route, well, first off, it was raining this morning when we left, so the crop is getting timely rains. Great for the crop, not so good for crop scouting, but, you know, it's kind of all over the place on the corn. Very wide range. We had some fields that obviously showed moisture stress, and then we saw some fields that obviously got some pretty timely rain, pretty big potential out there. So our range on my particular route was 124 and a half up to 242. So, I mean, just an absolutely monstrous range there, almost doubling from the bottom end to the top end. And the soybeans, we only took one sample that was under 1,200 pods along my route this morning. It was in the low 900s. And then the upper ends of the bounds was about 1,800. So, you know, but most of them, all but one was above 1,200 pods in a 3 foot by 3 foot square. Very consistent soybean crop. So the soybean crop weathered through some of that, the dryness and stuff better than the corn crop did in some of those areas.
And Jeff, you're making your way through Nebraska today?
Correct. Our 10 routes took off out of Grand Island, Nebraska, and crisscrossed the southern third and the middle third, and we're heading to Nebraska City. On my route today, I would echo Brian's comment about the beans, extremely consistent, even though the corn was a little more variable. We averaged on 10 stops so far, 1584, which is pretty darn good. The low was 871, and that was our only one under 1,000 pods, and our highest was 2,475 pods in a 3 foot by 3 foot area. So the beans were very good, even in next to a field that might have been stressed or hurt by a little wind. The last stop we had was a wind damaged field. I walked in, it looked okay from the road. I got in and I went my 35 paces past the end rows, and there was a big chunk of knocked over corn. It wasn't completely knocked over, but there was a wide swath, and I kind of looked around to make sure that wasn't like represented, but that's where it was. Anyway, that turned out to be only 43 bushels to the acre. Our top yield today was 235. It was on an irrigated field, looked very good. Our tour average for the 10 stops was about 163. You know, if we took out that lower end, we'd probably be closer to 175, 180. But there's definitely little nicks here and there. There's some plants missing, so there might have been some planting problems. The crop, you can tell where it did rain and where it didn't rain down here in the southeast corner of the state. And beans could use one more drink to reach this yield potential that in southeast Nebraska.
Hey, thanks so much to you, Jeff Wilson, and to Brian Grady, too, for joining me today. And we'll look forward to our discussion tomorrow. Thanks much, guys.
Take care.
You bet, Todd. Thank you.
Brian Grady and Jeff Wilson are leading the eastern and the western legs of the Pro Farmer Midwest Crop Tour. They joined us here on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.